This is WPS1 Art Radio. Welcome to Art and Technology, discussions with visual and sound artists. This is your host, Daniel Durning, and we are bringing the show live from SIGGRAPH 2007, the International Conference and Exhibition on Computer Graphics and Interactive Techniques from the San Diego Convention Center. We're recording the show live at the Gorilla Studio, the hub of creative exploration and creation at the conference. And you can hear a lot of the people milling around, so bear with us today. Today's show will be a discussion about Second Life, a 3D interactive immersive environment experienced by millions of users on the World Wide Web. Today's guests are users and experts in the field of computer graphics and interactive media, and I'm happy to have them as guests today. They are Catherine Milton, Michael Wright, and Jacqueline Ford Morey. So Michael Wright is a painter who has explored digital media since 1980. He has exhibited digital and traditional works on a national level. Michael's digital work was included in Computer Graphics World 25th Anniversary Retrospective in January 2002. Wright is currently associate professor in digital media and liberal studies program at Otis College of Art and Design in Los Angeles. Jacqueline Ford Morey is at the University of Southern California, the current Institute for Creative Technologies, project manager and principal investigator for sensory environment evaluation, the C project, designed to create virtual environments that evoke emotional responses for participants. C will use extensive visual and auditory cues to create intense situations to provide fully emotional and evocative training experiences. She has worked at Rhythm & News, Blue Skies, and Disney Studios. Third, we have Catherine Milton, the director of the Aesthetic Technologies Lab at Ohio University College of the Fine Arts. Well, I'll start it off with Catherine. What is your experience with Second Life?
I've been involved with online communities for about a decade or more, and Second Life for off and on a couple years, but really intensively for the past year. Our experience with it at Ohio University is as a pedagogical space as well as a creative space. And what we're really interested in is taking different kinds of experiences that are indigenous to the digital domain, things that we wouldn't be otherwise normally able to see in our offline experiences, and bringing them and really underscoring what it is to work with these specific kinds of tools in this specific context. So instead of trying to replicate what we see in an offline world, we're trying to make very new kinds of experiences.
Jackie, could you tell us what Second Life is and how you came about using it?
Well, it's not a game. I'll say that first. It's not a game. It is an online community where many, many people can participate in a virtual world at the same time. And that virtual world is persistent. It changes according to what the users do. And it has a lot of creative abilities for people. I was introduced to it by a friend of mine who does a lot of role-playing games. And I never wanted to do the role-playing games because I didn't want to be beholden to the other members of a guild, or, you know, I wanted to do things at my own pace, and I wanted to be able to create in those kinds of worlds. So when I found out about Second Life, where you create everything that's in the world, and you actually own what you create, and you're allowed to sell it or display it or do whatever you want, then that was very appealing to me, because it didn't have the constraints that a game would have. It was very open-ended. It had the possibility for emergent behavior and for societies to form and to do this very naturally rather than it being imposed from a game structure.
This might be hard for our audience to understand in terms of what a virtual environment is or what this world, which is a Second Life immersive environment, is more like a video game, but it's not a game. It's a social world that you interact real time with people, but it is not a real world. It takes real time.
And it is a real world.
It is a real world.
Absolutely.
So, Michael, can you explain to our lay audience what exactly Second Life is in terms of this visual environment?
Well, it's probably a lot of things to a lot of people. And I think everybody goes into it for different reasons. I was brought into it by a librarian at Otis, who brought me down one day and said, "Hey, you teach this virtual stuff, the virtual world and everything. Have you heard of Second Life?" And I go, "No, I had not heard of Second Life." And they said, "Well, we have grant money for you if you want to go explore it." And the grant money wasn't a whole lot. I mean, like $1,500. And so I dived in there over a weekend and went exploring, and I was pretty impressed. Having been a gamer, having played on the Xbox and PlayStations and stuff like that, found my way, the ability to move around and stuff like that pretty easily. What really shocked me about that, about this environment, was the emotional content. And some very, very early on in. And yeah. All I can say is when I got into, not only was it a 3D environment, but it was a 3D environment that had the potential of being extremely intimate. And not only did it present educational opportunities, but it also presented opportunities on a very intimate level, I thought.
Catherine, you had mentioned that this is a real world. A real world basically takes up physical space and physical time. There's a relation to it in a graphical user interface. So basically, we're looking at a world that you can create. So you can build walls, you can walk around. You have a character that is called an avatar.
An avatar, that's right.
And you can construct this being in any manner, shape, or form that you desire.
Correct.
And it is capable of all sorts of locomotion, including a science fiction type teleporting from place to place.
Which is very convenient.
Yep.
And don't forget flying.
Yeah, don't forget the flying.
Flying is great. Fly.
Don't forget breathing underwater.
So, in such a malleable world, can you talk about it in kind of lay terms of how you use it as an artist, and what do you do with it?
What you can do in these environments is use them as a place for economic growth. We have artists who have never had an opportunity to be heard outside of their regions before, such as at Ohio University. We have a wealth of Appalachian artists who are performing the most brilliant kinds of bluegrass music that you could hear. You are not hearing them in New York City, as a rule, unless they are lucky enough to get out of our community. For our performers to have a global impact and to have a global audience and to cultivate a global audience. I know of different Second Life performers who are making a tremendous amount of money at being able to sell their CDs, being able to perform in the Second Life environment. As artists, as visual artists, we can also go into the gallery scene where we can show our works in a different way, whether they are exclusively offline works that we're generating and putting into the online environment. So there are a lot of different kinds of ways that artists can use this environment to extend their own creative platforms and in order to extend their audiences.
Thank you. Jackie, you had mentioned the New West Coalition.
It was an art show that a group of friends and myself called Ludica, it's a girl game group that we have, put together for the International Society of Electronic Artists last year. And what we did was just take a region of space in Second Life, one of what they call a sim, which is about 16 square virtual miles?
Yep.
Miles? We had some big artworks then. And we put out a call for people to submit artworks. And as Kathy said, there's things that you can do in the virtual world that you can't do in the physical world. So one of my favorite, very simple exhibits was It was a virtual maze, and the maze was composed of transparent walls with moving textures on them, so wave-like textures. And then the walls moved around, so they would be moving as you walked through it. Now, what the artist decided to do in the course of the show was build a transparent roof on the top of this maze. So there were probably 10 feet walls for the main part of the maze. She put a roof on top. All the avatars got up there and stood, and she made the roof what we call phantom, which meant that you went through it. So we all fell through it, and then we were in the maze, and we had to get out of the maze with the moving walls from wherever we stood. And it was just a great fun and something that couldn't be done in real life. We had another piece that was a mansion made out of giant crystalline shapes. And that was just really, really beautiful. So that was another creation that would have been hard to do in real life.
Now, Michael, you were mentioning the social aspects of the environment. The Second Life is a world, but it's multiple worlds happening simultaneously. If you could just mention, like, how does someone find your gallery? Just if I landed on this planet, how do I find your gallery? How do I interact with anyone? It seems like a very barren environment. The things that I have seen of it, it's just me walking around or you walking around.
Well, I'd hardly call it barren. Maybe at a corporationally sponsored Coca-Cola place, it might be a little barren. But if you go to any club just about, you're going to find quite a few avatars. And the clubs, you know, they move back and forth. If you like to dance, you can dance a lot in here.
So you were mentioning a club, I mean, yeah. And you were mentioning a gallery,
right?
And you were mentioning a place to play music. Where? When? How?
Well, if you were to go in there, one of the first things you do is you go down and hit your search area, and right away they'll list one of the things. They'll say popular places, and so the popular places are usually people that have paid to put themselves on the list. Like when I first got in, there was a club called Sanctuary. It was a heavy metal club. And some really far out avatars there. I mean, if you want to go see what avatars look like and what people can do with them, it was a great place to go. You could really check all that out. And then eventually you start finding other places. You meet other people in world, and you know, they'll tip you off to places. And also you can read profiles of people, and a lot of times they will list their favorite places. Another thing you can do in search is you can just type in a word and all kinds of stuff comes up. And if you just want to go explore, start wandering around.
That's the best thing to do, is to decide what you're interested in. So if it's art, you might type in art to the search thing. You can search in places that have to do with art. You could search in groups that have to do with art. You can join a group. You can look at events, and you can search through those events by topic. So if you wanted to look at for maybe a costume contest, which is one good way to earn the local currency, which is Linden dollars, you can go find a costume contest. I've made most of my money in the early days by being parts of these costume contests. Yeah, I was voted best in white, 'cause everything was white.
That's great.
It is a very social place. So there are people that are always doing events that have a social component. I went to a wonderful storytelling circle where a Hawaiian woman was telling stories of her native culture to us in a story circle. So there's lots of things that you can do. It's just a matter of searching, and they make it fairly easy for you to search for those things.
And the searches aren't only for things that might be thought of as frivolous or as just kind of entertainment, but there's also a lot of education that's going on, whether it is education on how to build within the environment so that you might yourself be able to generate your own income in the environment, or there are high-end discussions or Socratic get-togethers where people will pose some sort of a difficult topic, such as a couple getting ready to get married, and the wife to be, the bride to be, discovers that her groom to be has a marriage in Second Life. what are the issues around avatar relationships? What are our relationships between each other?
Now, this is Art and Technology. This is WPS1 Art Radio. And we're talking about a environment on the internet called Second Life with my guests, Michael Wright, Catherine Milton, and Jackie Ford Morey. A lot of these issues, you're saying Linden dollars. This program was developed by a specific company, and there is a means of exchange?
The Linden Labs is the name of the company that developed Second Life. It was started by Philip Rosedale, and he had the idea for it. And it actually wasn't what he set out to do, but it ended up being this virtual world that kept growing and growing and growing. So the first year, there were only a few thousand people in it. And now there's a probably a couple of million registered users.
8.6 million as of last night.
8.6. Yep. Okay, and the last time I got on, there were 45,000 people online at one time.
Yeah. Now, artists, you had mentioned CDs. Artists are selling their work using this virtual money.
The currency actually has an exchange rate. Someone runs around four lindens to a dollar. So things are priced fairly inexpensively comparatively to what you might think they should cost. But you could buy maybe a nice outfit for 300 lindens, or you could buy it for cash if you wanted to use your PayPal account. They've started doing that. So they do have a way to take the linden dollars that you've earned in-world and exchange them for real money, and vice versa. You can buy linden dollars with real money. And so it does have that transactional base, and they have something that almost looks like a stock market ticker thing in the offices where they show you how the stock or how the rates go up and down.
Now, you've actually created things that you've sold online, or do you sell real work, let's say artwork, offline?
I personally haven't sold anything in there because I create things, but they're specifically for me or for art pieces that I want to do. So I don't really sell anything. I actually buy a lot of currency and give it to my students. I teach game design within Second Life, so they don't know how to make money. So I just give them money so that they can go get the things they need to build whatever they're building.
Kind of an allowance.
I have a residency artist through the Aesthetic Technologies Lab who is selling work within the environment. He is selling online work in linden dollars, and he is selling it for, I believe, like 4,000 lindens for a piece that somebody might find in the gallery. But as well as that, he is discovering more about the people who are interested and might be interested in buying the pieces offline. I know that with one of the first people who bought his work, he found out their real address and also sent them gratis copies of the offline pieces so that he could have both.
Okay, I mean, could you define, let's say, Michael, could you define what offline, online, in-world?
Well, in-world is simply in Second Life, in that environment, mm-hmm. and out-world or real life is here. You know, and like and getting back to the sales part of it, I never went in to sell work or make money. I went in there to display the work that I do mm-hmm. because it looks gorgeous in there, and you can do it billboard size. So I've made the galleries I've created in here, and I've got five galleries in here, are huge, and 4,000 square feet, plus, and it allows me to put in 70 plus images for the portrait virus type things, and then I've been able to go backlog into the 80s up forward with my own personal work and start bringing some of that in too.
And so you have kind of a historical archive, and then you have a contemporary wing of your quote.
Well,
museum.
I have a Michael Wright Museum, and then I have the IBM Gallery. And I have the Marags Gallery, and some different things for different places. I have a store. The people I live with in there are builders and scripters and that kind of thing. I take 30%. They build the stuff. I bought the land, and after tier fee, I get, my things go up and down kind of like that. It's fun. I have a good time with it.
Now, you mentioned avatars. How many, if you have five galleries, how many personalities do you have?
Two.
Okay. And what are they?
Male and female.
And how could you all tell me what your names are online, or is that taboo?
Not at all. I'm Catherine Barth.
Okay. How many personas do you have since you have two?
Well, I'm a Rags Rider.
Rags Rider?
Marags. I'm Marags the Vampire.
Okay.
Well, I'm probably a little more unusual. I have about 24 avatars. The thing about Second Life is you can pay monthly to have certain privileges, but you don't really have to have a paid account to be able to experience Second Life. So I have a number of unpaid avatars. And then I have avatar shapes that I've designed that I can just put on my one avatar. So if you make an avatar that you like with particular clothes or appendages, or you've changed the avatar totally so it's a skeleton of a dragon or whatever, you can just save those in a folder and then just drag the folder to your 3D person and they'll change into that avatar. So when I started Second Life, I did it as twins. So I had two female avatars that looked alike, and they went around together. I played them on two separate computers, and people thought I was two people, and I gave them each a specific personality. It probably helps that I'm a Gemini. But but then my next avatar was a very old woman who looked like a cancer survivor, and I wanted to see how people would react to that person within this social virtual environment, and people were just amazingly accepting. You can look like anything in here, and people accept you in a way that they don't necessarily do in real life. There's a lot less prejudgment, and it's mostly your actions that speak for you. So there's a lot of experimentation in the social realm, and anthropologists and sociologists are definitely looking at Second Life for these kinds of questions that are raised and answered in very specific ways within a virtual environment.
Is this similar to, the bar scene in Star Wars?
I mean, can be the bar scene in Star Wars.
Yeah.
My class portrait for the last class that I did, we did a class portrait at the end. It had everything from the Kool-Aid pitcher man to one of those blowing, those sort of balloon men that they try and use at car dealers, to sexy women, to all kinds of things. It was quite the strange class portrait.
Mm-hmm. Now, Michael, you're very big on the interactive and social aspects of it. Although it does sound that Jackie is also experimenting with the social mores
for a much longer time than me, I'm sure. I just want to say a few things. I think it's really interesting in regards to the female part of it. Mm-hmm. Everybody's got a male female side. I think I have a very definite female personality when I go in there, and I have a short temper. I'm emotional. Not that I just am when I get into that mode. I've had
and
some
the women look on him.
Yeah,
sternly.
And I'm very much into women power and all that kind of thing, and I've had some real strange experiences around this. I mean, this experience is. I mean, the first thing that happened going in as a woman is I got hit on left and right, and all of a sudden I had that experience of what that was like for a female, and I really did get an experience of that. And I was quite surprised by it. I also was very surprised by some of the emotional stuff that happened around it. Marags, on the other hand, is kind of me. You know, how I am on a regular day-to-day basis, kind of laid back, having a good time, and like that. But when I go in to be the Beamer, she's definitely still a part of me, but a very different part of me that I don't think I've experienced before. The funny thing I have found about it is it has bled over to real life in a lot of ways. More jewelry these days.
you do get a lot of bling in Second Life.
Yeah.
A lot of jewelry to wear, a lot of accoutrements.
Now, how do people communicate in terms of, you mentioned storytelling. Is this through text, or is this a spoken word?
The storytelling circle was done as a streaming sound file. As Catherine said, you can actually have live music concerts in there, and like BBC has music concerts. There's a number of pop stars that have had concerts within Second Life. So this woman just streamed the storytelling in that way. Most of the communication is by typing, or it has been, and by gestures. So you can make animations and upload them to Second Life, so you can customize the way your avatar moves. The typing, you can type whatever you want. And then the newest thing is they have an actual voice capability in Second Life, so you can talk to people.
The horn that you hear in the background is actually a rapid prototyping CNC milling machine that is slowly grinding a piece of plastic into a recognizable object.
Could even be a Second Life 3D avatar. Could. I had mine done last year in the Gorilla Studio.
Serious?
Yes.
Oh, that's so cool.
Now, we're going to have to close it up in a little bit. Michael, would you like to talk about, and you all get a moment on what you're doing now, let's say in Second Life, or making artwork derivative from Second Life, and would you like to talk about your work?
When I was asked to be a guest artist here in this particular program first year, I pitched the idea of taking a gallery, creating a gallery in world, where I had done something called the Portrait Virus in SIGGRAPH 04, 05 in the Gorilla Studio, and I would bring that into the Second Life environment. And then beyond that, then I was going to do a kind of a Portrait Virus-y type of thing to the avatars and bring them into the Gorilla Studio and print them in real life. So that's kind of what I'm doing. What I'm doing in the fall, though, is that Otis, the school I work for, finally has bought a sim, and I'm taking in 50 students to that environment, primarily to give them some building skills much earlier in their sophomore year. They usually don't get into a Maya or type of a program or any kind of building until their junior year. Felt it was a weakness in the program, so I proposed this. The library purchased it on their budget, got my chair to approve it, and so we're going in 3 weeks.
Catherine, would you like to talk about what you're doing both online and offline?
At Ohio University, we have 7 sims, and sim is an island. We have a very strong emphasis on pedagogy. So we are teaching courses not only that are at the undergraduate and graduate level, but we are also partnering with middle schools in our area to offer different kinds of interactive experiences for middle school kids to have engineering practices. And when it comes to the works that we're doing offline, the At Lab itself is a center for arts and technology and the creative hub for the College of Fine Arts when it comes to motion capture, motion tracking, blue screen technologies, high-end printing, all sorts of different kinds of international residency programs. So while Second Life is a big passion of my own, it is not the single thing that we do at the At Lab.
Okay. And Jackie, what adventures are you having both online and offline?
Well, my offline work is in immersive virtual environments, mostly the kind with the head mountain that really shut you out from the rest of the world. This world I've been exploring for the different kinds of immersive properties it has. And I've actually done some of my scientific research within Second Life. So I'm an artist and a scientist. And the work I've done for my research is to bring physiological signals from people into Second Life and have it affect the program actually know how people are feeling so that it can respond in certain ways. So perhaps if you get too relaxed, a bomb might blow up, or if you get too agitated, if it's a learning situation, then perhaps a tutor can come help you. So it just triggers certain things to happen for either training or for art purposes. And so I'll probably be rebuilding some of my my more immersive virtual environments that I've done on large systems within Second Life in the next year.
This has been a interesting discussion on the virtual world. I would like to thank the Gorilla Studios and ACM Seagraph for allowing us to record here today. And I would like to thank our guests, Michael Wright, Catherine Milton, and Jacqueline Murray, for being here today. And this has been your host, Daniel Durning. For Art and Technology, I would like to say your mother loves you and heal the planet.